Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to JSW Energy Limited's Q3 FY22 post-results conference call hosted by ICICI Securities. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Rahul Modi. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Aman. On behalf of ICICI Securities, I welcome you all to the Q3 FY22 earnings call of JSW Energy. We have the senior management from the company attending this call. JSW Energy has started the calendar year with great set of results. Congratulations for that to the entire team. I will hand over the call to Mr. Ashwin Bajaj, Group Head, Investor Relations, who will introduce the management and start the call. I would like to now hand over the call to Ashwin. Thank you. Over to you, sir. All the best.
Thank you very much, Rahul, and thanks for hosting the call. Good evening, everyone. It's my pleasure to welcome you to JSW Energy's results call for Q3 FY22, as well as an update on our renewables-led growth strategy. We have with us today Prashant Jain, our CEO, and Pritesh Vinay, our CFO. We will start with the opening remarks by Mr. Jain and then open the floor to Q&A. With that, over to you, Mr. Jain.
Thank you, Ashwin. First of all, a very happy New Year to each one of you. During the quarter, the power demand went up by 3.4%, and for nine months, the power demand went up by 9.6%. Of this, the generation we saw in the first nine months, 10.8% generation was increased by thermal. Hydro was more or less flat, and renewable generation was up by 14.4%, which demonstrates that the entire growth is now being met more and more by renewable energy capacity, which was also reflected in terms of the capacity addition, which I will be talking little later. During the end of the quarter, 31st December 2021, the total installed capacity is 393 GW. The total net capacity addition in first nine months is 11 GW, of which small capacity of net capacity of 491 MW was added in thermal. Rest all came in renewable space, which talks about that how the incremental power demand is being met by the renewable energy. During the quarter, the average merchant tariff was 4.89 rupees, and first nine months it was 4.07 rupees. As compared to the last year same quarter, 2.76 rupees and 2.58 rupees last year first nine months. We have demonstrated a very good performance in terms of the hydro generation, which was up by 13%. Net generation overall was down by 3%, primarily because our 300 MW unit in Ratnagiri was under maintenance since 1st of September till date. It is expected to start generation by end of February. Excluding that, in all business verticals, thermal, hydro, the generation has been very good. We have seen a very good short-term sales also. Because of lower O&M costs and higher short-term sales and better operational performance in terms of the lower auxiliary power consumption and better heat rates, our EBITDA has been highest in quarter three EBITDA in last five years at 882 crores, and similar thing has been observed in the profit after tax. In the first nine months, we clocked more than 860 crores of the net profit, which is more than what we clocked in the last whole year at 790 crores. This performance is going to continue going forward. The receivables were down 20% at 1,356 crores, by 20% as compared to 1700 crore last year. Because of this, our net debt has come down to 6000 crore, lowest ever. We reduced 500 crore of the net debt during the quarter. Our interest cost has come down to lowest number of weighted average at 7.82% as compared to 8.24% same period last year and 8.04% last quarter current year. All this has reflected to our net debt to EBITDA to be falling sharply lowest in the industry and also in the, for the company at 1.74 times. In terms of the projects, we have been growing better than our expectation. As we discussed last time, the company has undertaken 2.5 gigawatt of the projects which are under construction with a capital outlay of 15,600 crores. The first project of 225 megawatt will get commissioned in the current quarter. And quarter one next year onwards, every year the commissioning will keep on happening. This demonstrates the execution capability of the company. We are the only company in the SECI 9, SECI 10 grid which is going into commissioning, whereas other people are still in a PPA signing mode and various other formalities. Next year, we are expecting between 1 to 1.3 gigawatt of the capacity commissioning. And this will entail that we will be making a capital expenditure of in excess of 8,000 to 10,000 crore rupees next year and every year. One more notable point, while the company has been in a capex mode for last 3 to 4 quarters with a capital outlay of 15,000 crore and we will be getting into the commissioning of the first project in the current quarter, our net debt has been coming down. This talks about the unique positioning of the company of cash flow management and various instruments which have been deployed. Thereby, the debt draw is happening at the time of the commissioning of the project, which reduces the IDC and also improves the credit rating and profile of the company. With regards to the reorganization of the business, we have already filed before NCLT, in which the amalgamation for merger of JSW Future and NEO has been filed. And it is moving as per the expected lines. We are expecting that by within next 6 to 9 months time frame, this exercise should get completed. Our hydro project is also moving better than our expectation. We have already completed 60% of the tunneling. At a pace at which this project is moving, this will be the fastest ever project built in this country. Any hydro project with the COVID three waves, with various lockdown and COVID restrictions, in spite of that, this will be the fastest ever project built in the country. With this, I am happy to hand over the floor for question and answers. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Vishal Zaraya from Max Life Insurance. Please go ahead.
Hello. Thank you. The capex that you've currently incurred of 1600 odd crores on the 2,500 megawatt that is under construction. So, and some of these projects will start commissioning from March onwards. So, why is the capex so low? So one is that, and if you can break down this capex as to what is the capex in the SECI projects that you've incurred, what is on the captive projects and what is on Kuwait, please. Thank you.
Vishesh, you would like to take this question?
Yeah, Vishal, thank you for your question. See, so there is CapEx spent and there is CapEx cash outflow, right? So when we put in the presentation a spend of 1640 crores, that is a cash that has been spent. Of course, this is not the total expense that has been incurred, right? Over and above this, we've got commitments of close to 5,200 crores. So totally, if we were to look at the commitments that we have made, right, the commitments are, you know, well, close to, almost close to 7,000 crores, which is more than 40% of, 42-43% of the total pipeline of 16,000 crores. Because obviously, you know, when the idea is this, that how do we, the point that Prashant was also trying to make earlier, you know, that you don't spend everything upfront. For example, for the solar panels, when we place the orders, we have to open an LC, that is a non-fund-based exposure, right? That doesn't entail a upfront cash outflow, right? But, you know, we will be commissioning that particular project during this quarter itself, and revenues will start flowing from next quarter onwards. But once the LC is, you know, becoming due, there will be opportunity to look at, you know, taking an usance, another leg of usance, and getting an additional 180-day credit period and all that before the actual drawdown of the term loan debt happens, because then you make some interest rate arbitrage, you know. So the idea is the point that Prashant was also making, that from a project execution, project management point of view, we are also kind of, you know, deploying what are going to be the more efficient ways of squeezing, you know, the costs and ensuring that the returns get a kicker in some way, shape or form, you know. So that's how we are going about it. In terms of the breakup, you asked, I think that was the second leg of the question. So if I look at, you know, this CAPEX that we have incurred, during the 9-month period, what we have incurred is actually close to 1,150 crores. In this, on Kutehar alone, we would have spent about close to 300 crores. On SECI, both 9 and 10 projects combined, we would have spent about 450 crores. On the group captive, which is a 958 megawatts, we would have spent close to 320 crores. And the balance would be for the normal CAPEX that we are doing on the existing operational plans. Yeah, so that's the broad breakup.
Okay. And the other question is update on the pumped hydro storage projects.
Sorry, update on?
I'll take that question. So as far as the hydro pump storage projects are concerned, we have already got the water allocation in two projects. One is in Maharashtra for 1.5 gigawatt and also in Rajasthan for 1 gigawatt. And we have already applied for environmental and forest clearances, and techno-economic feasibility report is under preparation. Once techno-economic feasibility reports are done, they will be submitted to CEA, and then post that we will start construction of the projects. And in various other states in Karnataka, in Andhra Pradesh, Telangana, and Odisha, and Chhattisgarh, there are various other projects totaling up to 10 gigawatts which are in advanced stage of allocation and various approvals. So we are expecting that the first project, we will start construction sometime end of next financial year or early FY 2023-24.
Okay. And what would be the CAPEX for this particular project that you are referring to?
The different projects will be different. It will be anywhere between 2.5 to 3.5 or up to 3.75 crore per megawatt. So typically these projects are 6 hour peaking cycle, which we design, which entails for approximately 25% PLF. But you can imagine that it will be more than, you know, twice as efficient. Typically, hydropower project, you build at 12 crore a megawatt, you achieve 50 to 55% PLF. Here, you will be 25% of, or less than 25% of that project cost and half the PLF. So, in terms of efficiency, they will be double the efficient, more than double.
Thank you very much. I'll come back in the queue. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Apurva Bahadur from Investec. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, sir, and congratulations. Good set of numbers. So again, follow-up question on this pump hydro project. So will we be signing PPAs for these, or will these be for green hydrogen production, given that it will require round-the-clock power?
So we have a lot of opportunities and options. So on which we are working. So we will be probably, the way we are seeing that we will be, instead of PPAs also, there will be a various services which we can offer. Because like today, to give you an example, if I am sitting in my BKC office, as a building we are connected to particular DISCOM who is supplying the electricity. But I am taking power from a DISCOM because I need power only morning 8 a.m. till evening 6 o'clock, only 5 days a week. Whenever I am not drawing, I am not paying for that. That's why I am ready to pay on an average 12 rupees a tariff. Now, this kind of a PPA, if I am a renewable power company, I cannot enter. But if I am a renewable power company with hydro pump storage, I can supply power whenever you want in that particular time. That opportunity is available. So those are the kind of a service solutions which will be the future market, and that's where we are working on.
Okay, so we're looking at open access green power supply as well.
Yeah, that's one of the opportunity other than the green hydrogen.
Okay, fair enough, sir. So then, I think coming to the green hydrogen side, I think a couple of quarters back we announced something, tie up for the think tank in Australia. So have we formalized our plans, and would you like to share anything if we will be foraying into this market, and what is the scale of the foray?
So we are doing right now the scoping exercise, and techno-economic feasibility is going on. We are in a final stage of discussions for all these exercises, including the techno-commercial discussion with various technology providers. And it is moving much faster pace than what we have initially expected. And results have been very, very encouraging. I strongly believe that very soon we will be going to the board for a concrete proposal of investment into the country, and probably we will be coming out the fastest ever project build and very large project which will be built for green hydrogen as well as green ammonia and further some other chemical derivatives.
Oh, wonderful. Very good to hear that, sir. Sir, lastly, on the renewable capacity addition side, so I think as a country we have promised up to 450 gigawatts of renewable capacity by 2030. Do you see that being achieved given the current pace of ordering and all the module issues, ALMM, BCB, etc.?
It's a tough question what you are asking because right now because of the two strategic objectives Government of India has been trying to balance. One is Made in India objective, and second is green energy objective. They have been working against each other so far, which has been a big difficult situation for the pace of the growth, but such thing can be overcome very quickly once this kind of a capacities are built up and capabilities are built up in the country. And then doing 40-50 gigawatt every year capacity addition is not a big deal. China has done it, India can do even better than that. It's only the capability building, and building such kind of a capability in India, it will take maximum 3 to 4 years time frame. So if you are talking about 2030, yes, it is achievable. If you are thinking that the interim capacity target, which is there for up to 2024, yes, that is tough. It won't be possible.
Just one more question, quick question, if I may squeeze in. And I guess if you could please share your contribution of merchant power sale to EBITDA in Q2 and 9M, that will be very helpful. Thanks a lot. That's all for my side.
Yeah, if you get a chance to look at the presentation that we have put up, on the website also, and could be the link to that should be in your inbox. There is a particular EBITDA bridge, which is given both for the quarter as well as for the 9 months. And
sorry, I missed that.
Yeah, you'll get everything that you need. Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Vivek Ramakrishnan from DSP Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Good evening. My question was on the receivables. There's been a sharp fall in receivables, which is a very good thing. Do you believe that this is sustainable? And going forward, would you say that the counterparty risk could be coming down significantly because either you'll be supplying to JSW Steel or to SECI projects?
So, look at last 4 years. It has been sustainable, whereas the deterioration has been happening. So, we don't see any reason that why it will not be sustainable. These are the two reasons. Primarily, one is that our quality of power in terms of tariff, because of which DISCOMs have an incentive to pay us on time. Second is our management, the way we work, and so both entail for this. And of course, going forward, the incremental contributions will be coming from the SECI contracts, so that will be also an added advantage.
Okay, so that was my question. Thank you very much and good luck.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Murtuza Azriwala from Kotak Securities. Please go ahead.
I have two questions.
Murtuza, your audio is breaking. Can I request you use the handset now?
Is it better now? Good.
Yes. Okay. Can you come in the network? Your voice is breaking.
Is it better now?
Yeah, much better.
Okay. So, two questions. One is on the target business capacity has been converted to a captive status during the quarter. Would the, is there any advantage to having done that, and would it require you to sort of, at least on a normal basis, direct from state to the consumer for a captive status, and is there any advantage? And second is on the fuel cost and merchant dynamics, given, how this is moving so far, it appears that we're not getting the heat of higher imported coal. So can you give us some indication of, how much inventory, low cost inventory we have, and how is that situation looking? You've had some contribution from the short term markets. Is that more sustainable for a few quarters, or things are already not looking as possible?
Sorry, Murtuza, your voice has been consistently breaking and I could not understand. Pratish, you would like to take this call?
Murtuza, if I understood the first part of your question, which is slightly better audible, you were asking that, you were referring to what CEA has done in terms of classifying unit 2D.
Yes.
IPP,
yes.
Right?
Yes. Yes.
So I could get that bit, but I didn't really
have a title question on that. Huh. So you are saying that what's the advantage of that?
Yes, is there any advantage or disadvantage in doing it? It's a classification.
Contractual part, because if I keep that in ITP status, then I will not be able to sell that power other than any discount.
Okay.
If I want to sell in open access, for example, a industry there X, which is into some manufacturing activity, I want to sell that power in an open access contract, then they will have to pay open access charges and cross subsidy surcharge, which is in excess of, for example, in Maharashtra, it will be in the range of 2.5 rupees to 3 rupees, other than the capacity charge plus fuel charge. Then it becomes deterrent for anybody to do that. Instead of that, if it is a CPP status, they take 26% equity into the company and such charges are not levyable. then they then it is economical for them to produce. So that's how that's the only difference between a CPP and IPP.
Right. But will we have to divest 26% for the captive component now, or it's more nominal divestment?
It's a nominal on the
face value of the
that has to be there, not on the listed company that way.
Okay, okay. And so the second part of the, you know, the second question, if I'm more audible now, is, you know, on imported fuel costs, they've obviously been higher. Your numbers still reflect a more contained set of fuel costs. So how much, you know, low-cost inventory we have before the high coal prices started to?
No, no, we are not, if you know about our company, our 100% of the fuel cost is pass-through, including exchange, logistics, and index prices. So we are insulated. And some of our contracts have already moved to the job work, where the counterparty is bringing coal and we are only getting the fixed cost.
Okay. Okay. Fair enough, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rohit Kothari from GCN Holdings. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi Prashant. Prashant, could you throw a little more light on your entire hydrogen foray? I know you're going to put it up to the board, but the hydrogen, the electrolyzer, then the downward ammonia, and if you're going to also look at other downstream chemicals, the second is, what is the size of electrolyzer or the range of investment you're looking in this year? And the third is, you know, we've seen one or two other large business houses also announcing their hydrogen foray, and they have given some target cost at which they would like to produce hydrogen to make it viable, because the current hydrogen ain't as viable. So where do you see the end cost or the range of cost at which, you know, this will happen? And the fourth, are you going to use any of your hydrogen for in-house group purposes, or would there be a captive use with JSW Steel? This is the fourth, and this is on the hydrogen. And just one more question. What is the long-term plan of the JSW Steel stock, which you own, as it has appreciated? And would there be any long-term plan to liquidate a part of this to fund any of your hydrogen forays? So if you can, Prashant, so light. And once again, fantastic set of numbers, and a very, very focused strategy which has come out of your management, and really congratulate for that.
Thank you, Rohit. So, firstly, that, you know, there are a lot of talks which are which are there right now about the green hydrogen. Now, the most important thing to produce hydrogen is the renewable power. So anybody who can produce power at the lowest tariff will be able to produce hydrogen at a lowest tariff. So that's one part of it. The second part of it is the locations which are important. That means if you hold certain locations where you are going to deploy the renewable technology, where you can harness most efficiently, and you have a capability to deploy capital most efficiently in terms of the lowest possible gross block per megawatt. If you have lowest possible operations and maintenance costs, these three things will drive your capability to produce renewable power at the lowest cost. And if on top of it your cost of funding is lowest, then you are the most efficient, and then thereby you will be in a position to do that. The fifth important criteria which is there is that how you are going to develop a round-the-clock solution for getting a renewable power to produce green hydrogen, because renewable power will be available only 30% time during the year. The average PLF will be 30-32%. If it is solar, it will be 26%. If it is wind, it is 32-35%. Average is going to be 30-31. So how do you deploy a round-the-clock solution? And how that round-the-clock solution is transmitted most efficiently, because the PLF is less, to a particular location where you are having a consumption point. Then the next piece, which is also important, is that what do you do with the byproduct, which is the oxygen which is produced from it. That also will be deciding factor on your capability to produce green hydrogen efficiently. The next piece will be the supply chain on the green hydrogen. What do you do with that green hydrogen? So whether it is to be converted in ammonia, whether it is to be mixed in the natural gas, whether it is to be used in a steel plant, whether it is to be stored and then to be done into the mobility application or other industrial applications like refinery, which is being talked about. Now, why I am talking about all these strategic intents, these are the various aspects which decides what will be the cost of production for individual organizations to do that. We believe that most of the building blocks which I have mentioned out of this approximately 9-12 building blocks, we at JSW Energy are well placed to not to wait for government policy intervention, and therefore what we are talking about, we will be in a position to start constructing this project much earlier than other people because of our strategic advantage in all these 10-12 blocks, and also at a lowest possible cost and lowest possible tariff. That will help us to achieve various things. I'm sorry I have not answered point blank for individual aspect of your question, because you have asked too many things, but I have tried to summarize most of the things which you have asked. So yes, we are having a lot of strategic advantages in each and every aspect, which will be driving our gross block also lower, and in terms of capital allocation as well as the cost of production, and thirdly, users point of view. Now, we would like to talk in detail as we will be going to the board and then approving it at some point of time, which is in the very advanced stage. The second thing which you have also talked about, I'll give you some color, that typically if you want to produce 10,000 tons of hydrogen, you need close to 100 megawatt of the electrolyzer capacity. That's the roughly the ballpark number. And if you want to put 100 megawatt of the electrolyzer capacity, you need close to 300 to 350 megawatt of the renewable capacity. Plus, in addition to that, you will have to set up the various storage applications to make the power to round the clock. So that's the kind of a numbers you look at it. Then, in order to produce approximately, say, if you are looking for a 200,000 tons of ammonia plant, you will be looking something like 35,000 tons of green hydrogen to consume that. And so that's how it is there. Then in terms of the oxygen byproduct which will get developed, for every ton of the green hydrogen which you produce, you will be generating close to 5.5 to 6 times of the green hydrogen in terms of the waste as a byproduct, which you will have to dispose of and to create a value. So these are the broad numbers, if I have answered your questions.
Yes, I think, Prashant, on the JSW steel stake,
So we have already classified them as a non-strategic in nature, and so at some point of time when we need money, we will be certainly happy to monetize them. If you see that we have been aggressively doing the capital expenditure, in spite of that, I have 2,200 of the cash available with us. Our net debt is coming down because of the various attractive and very interesting tools which we are able to deploy. We are able to source the, you know, the LCs to secure the equipment in a large capacity and then convert them into usage, which is much, much efficient way to do that. And our debt comes onto the book only after the commissioning of the project when it is started generation. So these are the various innovative tools. So at some point of time, we will certainly need more and more equity. At that point of time, we will use this as a buffer.
Yeah. Thanks, sir.
Thank you. A reminder to our participants, please press star and one if you wish to ask the question. The next question is from the line of Anuj Upadhyay from HDFC Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity, sir. One clarification, sir, on the capacity addition part. We have 2.5 gigawatt under construction, which would begin commissioning from the next financial year onward. And probably
this financial year onwards, current financial.
Okay, the phase one. So probably it may last till, say, you know, by the end of FY24 or by the mid of FY25. And here, this is for the 2.5 gigawatt. But in the presentation, we have mentioned that our target is to scale this up to around 10 gigawatt by FY25. So could you just, clarify that, are there any inorganic opportunity which we are eyeing or certain other projects which are in a very advanced stage of discussion, which could, you know, come into picture in a very near term so that the execution happens over the next 2 to 3 years kind of a period so as to meet the target? And secondly, on the pump hydro storage, so any rough idea or estimates on the tariff which we are looking at through this project?
The first question, to answer that, as we have said that we have already built a portfolio of more than 20 gigawatt in terms of the resource site with us. So we are already having that, and we are converting them into the projects, and so there are a number of other projects which are under discussion, bilateral also, and we have already planned for execution, whether it is for captive use in for green hydrogen or to integrate it with the hydro pump storage and offer that as a solution, and also for the sticky bridge. So all these are the pipelines which are already crafted, and then in due course of time we are going to announce them. And what I can tell you is that whatever we have planned at this point of time, we will be only accelerating that. So if we have talked about certain capacity numbers, then we will be achieving them sooner than later. And in terms of the inorganic opportunities also, we have been very actively pursuing, and but we don't want to grow either our book or our capacity by an inorganic way by compromising our returns. So you will not find us at a bidding war in SECI base or in the acquisition race where the returns are not qualitative. For us, growth is paramount, but at a qualitative return. That's what is the most important thing. So we have been consistently talking about our free cash flow yield are on a adjusted network and on a proper adjusted balance PPLI is in excess of 18% to 19% for the entire portfolio, for throughout the life. And that's how we have been growing, and that's why we are, in spite of the difficult sector position, we have been maintaining a consistent cash flow position. So we believe we would like to retain that aspect, and yet we will be able to accelerate what we have guided for.
Got it, sir. And on the tariff side, sir, for the pump storage project?
As I said, just now I had explained that these are the projects which will be going in for various solutions. Because, you know, if you are looking at it, if you read our company strategy little differently, we are migrating from a power company to a services and product company. Going forward, you will see us more of a company which will be offering services in terms of supplying power at a particular timing, at a day, time, block which you want. If you say, I need only 15 minutes power during this time, I will give you. If you need a particular product like a hydrogen, ammonia or some other chemical derivative, I will give you. So we are going to build renewable power will be a baseline for us, but we will be offering various other solutions. So going forward, you will see that the strategy will be migrating from a commodity company or a simple power company entering into long-term PPAs.
Fair enough, sir. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you. Anyone who wishes to ask a question at this time, can you please press star and one. The next question is from the line of Rahul Modi. Please go ahead.
Thank you, sir. And again, you know, big congrats for an excellent set of numbers. Sir, you've been quite vocal about, you know, the demand supply mismatch being visible. And we've seen that obviously in Q3, where we saw power prices touching almost 20 bucks. So how do you see, sir, the overall demand situation and, you know, obviously, and how our capacities, you know, will cater to that? As you mentioned that we are almost fully tied up. So that is one. Secondly, sir, you know, there were some previous questions asked also on the opportunity size. Now, you know, we've seen that the bids in the renewable space have been slightly, you know, erratic. When do you see the pickup over the next couple of years? How much of annual bidding do you see? And, you know, retargeting how much? You obviously mentioned that IRR is very critical. But the opportunity size share from that point of view, so what is your view in that?
So look at this way, that this year, 9 months power demand has grown 9.6% first 9 months. Whereas similar period last year, there was a contraction of close to 4%. So if you net off adjusted, you are talking about 5% demand growth. And that's what is the average of last 20 years in the country. Now, I don't want to talk about that, okay, now the capital cycle, CapEx has revived and then everything else will be shooting for the higher consumption because of the more and more urbanization is taking place, more and more homes are getting built and more industrial capex is happening because of which power demand will grow. Now I continue to say that the way India has grown over a period of last 20 years and last 5 years, the same way power demand grows, then it is you are talking about 5% demand growth. Now you have seen in this year and also the last year and previous year the thermal capacity addition is not taking place. It is only the existing NTPC or some state projects which are under development and are getting commissioned. Now, those state-owned and central-owned utilities have also stopped constructing any new thermal capacity. So, it is safe to assume that no new thermal capacity will be added up. Existing thermal capacity may get fully utilized and part of the capacity will get retired based on various other requirements. Now the future requirement will only be met by renewable capacity, and which is that my opening remark also, which I said that 95% of the additional incremental generation has been met by renewable capacity addition and 95% of the additional new capacity is also by renewable. So that means at 165,000 megawatt of the base load and 185,000 megawatt of
peak load, you are talking about 9-10,000 megawatt of the incremental demand which will be met by renewable resources. Now there are certain challenges, like one of the participant was asking, how do you see whether given the challenges in terms of the manufacturing capabilities and the taxation and various other things, whether this target will be met. So yes, for a short term, 2-3 years, the capacity addition could be a problem, which could accelerate after the, you know, the sufficient capability in India is built. For that period of time, you may see shortages. That's what I have been talking about. What you have seen, some bout of the peak power today also, you know, average tariff is around 4 rupees, but in certain times you are seeing 8 rupees, 9 rupees is the power tariff. And that's what it is happening primarily because of such kind of a situation. You have seen the thermal tenders which has been brought from, for example, Punjab, 4 rupees 50 paisa X plus is the tariff for 3 months. That's the kind of a tariff which people are quoting with a domestic quote. So these are the things which are precursor to the shortage you are going to see in next couple of years, which will get mitigated when the India builds a lot of manufacturing capability in due course of time. And that point of time, adding 40-50 gigawatt of the renewable capacity every year to meet incremental 10 gigawatt of the power demand is not going to be a challenge. But yes, everything doesn't move in a linear fashion, but this will get even out over a period of decades. That's how my take is.
Yes, sir. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mohit Kumar from DAM Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. Congratulations on a very, very good quarter, sir. So my first question is, given the bout of, you know, the rise in prices in merchant prices in the quarter, is there any point in having a slightly higher merchant capacity for us the next few years? And the major question is that what is the status of RTC to bid? Are we participating? And do you intend to tie up this capacity, let's say if we decide to tie up for the long term? Are you looking at the RTC bids or it's only captive?
You're talking about RTC in renewable or RTC you are talking about thermal?
Oh, I'm talking about RTC thermal procedures, yeah. The combination.
So I tell you one thing, that you know, we have the capacities which are based on the imported coal. And given the prices where they are today at $165 API 4 index, it is not at all viable to produce power at that tariff. And for example, the fuel cost today, only fuel costs are in the range of 5-25%. So how do you service the merchant market in this kind of environment? So this kind of a merchant market is very, very tough merchant market. That's why you don't see enough thermal capacities which are running, and then domestic coal is not available for merchant market. So this is very challenging environment in terms of the merchant business. That's why we have decisively moved out of the merchant market. We take the advantage whenever there is a very good period where we can make a good contribution. At that point of time, we are doing this. But eventually, our whole idea is to integrate whatever open capacity is with the long-term PPA. That's how we see.
But the long-term PPA looking for captive or also looking for participating?
We are absolutely open for captive and or the DISCOM, but I don't think any DISCOM is going to enter into a long-term PPA other than the thermal renewable integrated bids. We participated in one bid, but unfortunately that did not see the attractive rate. And now there are more bids which are coming up. For example, Indian Railways have come up with a bid where, you know, 150 megawatt of a thermal renewable RTC bid has come. And SECI is also planning to more bids in that. So there we will be integrating our thermal plus renewable portfolio.
Understood. Second question is, sir, on the rest of the steel owning 26% in the listed entity for Ratnagiri to be classified as group capital? I think my understanding is correct, right? And why JSW Steel is going to own 26% in the subsidiary? You can as well have it in the listed entity, right? Additional stake.
So, if you read the Electricity Act in the country, any group captive customer must own 26% equity into the company. Then only you are qualified as a group captive customer, and then you need not to pay a cross subsidy surcharge and an additional surcharge, which is in the range of 2 rupees 50 paisa to 3 rupees depending upon the state.
Absolutely, sir. What I'm Steel owns 26%, he owns a number of shares in the listed entity for the Ratnagiri to be classified as group captive. Is my understanding right?
That's correct, Mohit. JSW Steel already owns shares of JSW Energy. So, those shares are treated as its contribution, you know, holding the 26% equivalent for those three units that are targeted. Yeah.
Why can't they duplicate that in this for the renewables? So why does they have to hold separately?
No, they will. So if you look at the way the assets are housed, Ratnagiri plant is directly owned by JSW Energy Limited.
Okay.
Standalone.
Understood.
Right.
Understood.
So just to complete the question which you've not asked, we are building a captive renewable project for JSW Steel as well. So they are being housed in those separate SPVs, right? Now, in that particular SPV for a captive project, JSW Steel will own 26% equity stake of that particular SPV, right, to comply with the Electricity Act rules that Prashant was talking about.
Understood. Last one on the pilot project for hydrogen, what are the kind of tactics and what are the things you are trying to do exactly if you have, identified the projects? Can you please share that?
Yeah, we'll share in due course of time as I explained a lot about hydrogen project, and we will let you know, and it will not be a pilot project, it will be a directly big commercial scale project.
Okay, because I saw in the presentation it was about some pilot projects. That's very odd.
No. It's going to be a big commercial scale project.
Lastly, on the pumped storage, will this capacity be used to bid for the storage tender for SECI? Is the right understanding?
As I said, that there will be a number of opportunities, whether it is using the pumped storage for making RTC for our own green hydrogen projects. It is a opportunity to offer the as a power as a services businesses to need to give it to the end consumer at a time when they want, and also to bid in the SECI bids. So these are the all three opportunities which are there. At this point of time, what I am trying to say is that we have already got allocation, we have got project allocation, water allocation, we have started the necessary regulatory approval, and we will start construction of these projects probably end of next financial year or early FY 2023-24 by taking various approvals, and we see a huge potential for these projects.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, due to paucity of time, we'll be able to take one last question. That is from the line of Sumit Kishore from Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Good evening. Thanks for the opportunity. Could you please speak about the time frame over which the reorganization of JSW into the grey and green businesses will be complete? And over the next, and post that, what would be the strategic direction in which you want to take this reorganization forward?
So the NCLT approval then should be in place between 6 to 9 months time frame, and the strategic intent is that entire growth will be coming from the renewable space. So everything what we are talking about, pumped storage, green energy and green hydrogen, green ammonia, chemical derivatives, everything will be housed under the renewable space.
Would you be evaluating like a vertical demerger of those two businesses into separate entities, listed entities?
In order to create the and unlock the stakeholder value, all options are available on the table, and that is the strategic intent.
So, probably sometime in the next financial year, the reorganization will be complete.
That's true.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. That would be our last question for today. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Rahul Modi for closing comments. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Jain. Thank you, Pritesh, and the entire team for a very detailed discussion and a lovely presentation. Thank you, sir, and all the best. Any closing comments?
Thanks, Rahul, for hosting the call, and thanks, everyone, for joining. Feel free to reach out if you have any follow-up questions. Thanks, and good evening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of ICICI Securities, that concludes this conference. Thank you all for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.